The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
All right. Hey, everybody. It's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the one and only Joe DeFalco, the owner and creator of FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling, here in Las Vegas. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing good. I think I'm a little confused or something. I don't know.
Dude, it's like the old tapings show up at the FSW arena. Where's Joe? No, I'm on my way. You're just getting out of bed. I'm on my way, I swear.
We only started late because you and Jack Slammy would talk for 45 minutes.
Don't blame that on me.
Hey, you know, we had to make sure that the crowd was all cheered out before the first match.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, for those listeners, let me say for those listeners and viewers who don't know, we have a great guest today, Mr. Paulie Cover. Paulie is currently with 103.9 The Bear in South Bend, Indiana.
You.
But Paulie was an integral part of being a host and TV personality for FSW, as well as one of the most hated commissioners in the history of commissionerships in wrestling.
No, he was the most hated commissioner.
Thank you. Yes.
Let's just dive into how did it come about that when you ended up in Las Vegas, you ended up with Future Stars of Wrestling. You didn't have any wrestling aspirations in your plans, did you?
Well, actually, I got into radio in Cleveland, and at the same time I got into radio, there was a wrestling promotion in Cleveland, well, Akron, Ohio, that I was the ring announcer and television host for, a weekly television program. But it was your stereotypical Midwestern indie promotion that was in a bar where they actually tore out the ceiling of the bar to make room so that the guys could actually jump off the top rope. It was the Shamrock Nightclub in Barberton, Ohio. There were about maybe three brain cells in the building. It was fantastic. But there were some names that came through that, like Raymond Rowe. He got his start over there. There's Michael Tarver from NXT, the original NXT guys.
Who?
It was fun over there. But then I moved to Vegas, and there was really nothing going on out here. Buffalo Jim had come and gone. Every time I would look up something, I'd see like that Nick Bockwinkel had something, but it was already over with. There was another company that was going on. And then I saw some sort of advertisement about a guy that was working with CBS. And I sent him a message. I'm like, well, I work for CBS. And it was with a company called Adrenaline Unleashed. And the owner of that company was advertising through some sort of CBS. You know, he put an ad in with CBS and said he was working with CBS, but whatever. You have a wrestling company. So he would kind of follow me wherever I would go, give me beer and tacos at night, and I would put over his product on the air. And coincidentally, he schmoozed up to the guy that ran Extreme Thing, and we would promote Extreme Thing on our channel. So I talked about wrestling nonstop. But after like a year, 2 years, not once was I asked to do anything with the company. I had never stepped foot in their ring. I never showed up at their facility, but other coworkers of mine started showing up and doing, and I'm like, well, thanks a lot, buddy. And at some point it was, on Facebook, I believe I received a message from a guy named Joe DeFalco. And, he said, he invited me down to the FSW arena. I had no clue what FSW was. I looked and I saw there was a show on Cox. Was it Cox at the time, Joe?
It was ILV TV or CW, one of the two.
And so I was watching that. I'm like, all right, this is interesting. This is different. This is more traditional than whatever AU is trying to be.
Yeah.
And it looks like they have more shows than one a year. And so I went down to the facility. I saw Joe and I saw a guy in the ring training who turned out to be Mike Modest. And I was like, I know him. He's from that movie. I know him. All right, cool. This is great. And Joe invited me to the show on Friday, which was the last Silverton show. And the rest is history. And the rest is, yeah.
So, Joe, what's your perspective and take of getting Mr. Cover involved in FSW?
I'm not sure how the first email came about. Maybe somebody had mentioned to me, hey, there's this guy on the radio who talks about wrestling possibly. You know, I don't remember that part, but I remember him sitting, you know, in the couch between the office and the bathroom. And I remember talking there. Like, I remember those little things. I don't remember the thing that got us there. And, you know, he had an interest. He had a passion for the wrestling. And it was like, you know, we were starting to do the TV and we were trying to upgrade and make things better. And, you know, in this business, especially starting, if somebody who can help you, who has, you know, some skill set, it's extremely important. It's extremely valuable because, you know, we had shitty production. We didn't even have handy cams back then. I don't even know what we had. I remember we had the crap of the crap, you know, but I always knew I was trying to do a good show. And even early on, we had good people on the show and it was just trying to make things better and better and better. And then Paulie's first real gig was co-hosting with the legendary Jack Slammy on the local television show.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. When I showed up, like Joe was just saying, the production was absolutely crazy. There were three things that brought me on board more than anything. And that was first Joe's opportunity, the fact that he even opened the door, but the fact that he never asked me for 1 cent. And I went, all right, cool. This is a cool promoter. I can work with him. He's not looking for a penny. And I was like, all right, I'm grateful for that because, you know, most people, they're looking for a couple bucks or some sort of, and I even said, cause at the time I wasn't working on air. I was in a layoff period between gigs with the same company that, you know, I on and off with for 15 straight years in Las Vegas. So I said, hey, I can't give you the free advertising and all of that sort of stuff. He said, come on down and just let's see where, you know, you could fit in around here. I remember though, when I showed up, there were two or three people that knew who I was. There was Cody, who came up, gave me a big hug and said, thank you for coming down here. There was Wes Beast, who gave me a big hug. And then Remy also, he was one that gave me a big hug and a smile. And I was like, I don't know who you guys are. I knew Remy from the TV show because you can't forget the Fro. The Fro is very memorable. There was the Fro and then there's Jack Slammy. How can you forget Jack Slammy and his giant mouth? And so Joe paired us up. First, I was live event host before I was on TV. Okay. Where, you know, Joe just said, you know, just warm up in front of the audience pretty much. And that's where a very bad tradition started taking place after the shows. That was, I guess, my first bit of exposure with FSW. Funny Bone would chop me. And it got a big pop with the crowd, but
yeah, it was a big cult following. It became a big cult following. People look forward to it at the end of
I should have charged money for it. I mean, I would have made probably a good 200-300 bucks a night with that, but I mean, the handprints would last on my chest for 13 days straight. Then Rush got in on it and Sin got in on it. And what's crazy is Modest He broke kayfabe. He came out. He said, we're done. Joe came out. He said, we're done with this. No more of this. And right in the middle of it, the crowd popping, Rush is about to hit me. Joe's like, stop. We're done. And Modest pulled me aside. He's like, no, Mean Gene never got hit. None of that. You are the Mean Gene of this company. In reality, it's more like the Sean Mooney, but I'll take the compliment. But he stopped. He's like, if anybody does that again, I'll beat the shit out of them. And Modest had my back. And after that, Modest really, he got a lot of points in my book. And I know other people have wonderful things to say about Modest, but in my book, he's one of the best. I love him.
Joe, what is that like when you have the new guy coming in who is not an in-ring talent, but is there to warm up the audience, get people engaged, and then you have the boys kind of breaking him in to see if he's tough enough. was that something? Why was it a breaking point for you to finally say, okay, enough is enough?
Well, I think I remember talking to Paulie, and he just wasn't that comfortable with getting chopped all the time. And,
I'm not made for it.
It was funny the first time, the second time. But again, in the wrestling business, everybody likes to wear out the welcome. It's like, there's always that point. How many suicide dives am I going to see? How many times is somebody going to grab Joey Ryan's dick? And how many times is somebody going to chop Paulie Cover? And he's not a wrestler. He's not getting paid. He's helping us out. It's like, again, we want people to be comfortable that are there to want to be there. Yeah. If you're not comfortable and you don't want to be there, guess what? You don't show up, And that's one thing we've always instilled because, there was always that old school mentality that, hey, got to give him a receipt. We got to do this. We got to see if he's tough enough, And nowadays there's plenty of 140, 50 pound wrestlers who've done quite well for themselves that maybe 20 years ago, they would have gotten shamed out of the business.
Yeah.
They had their fun and it was time to move on.
So where...
And luckily for me, I brought Joe Vernola with me into FSW JV. And they beat the shit out of him.
Hey, he blocked me for some reason on Facebook.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to find out what that's about.
Somebody made a comment. I think I know what it's about, but somehow a comment was made. And then, when he was basically answering to JV, it would say his name. And when he's on your friends list, it highlights. When I went to click it, I couldn't do it. So then when I went to the Facebook thing and I typed in his name, it says doesn't exist. So that would mean he blocked me.
Wow.
Did you not pay him one time or something?
I probably didn't pay him most of the time.
I gotta find out.
Yeah, now I'm curious too. I'm gonna have to reach out as well. let me ask
next guest.
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna have to have a rebuttal with Joe. So Paulie, how did you take to acclimating to the situation, the fans being a live host? And did you see something there that you wanted to, get onto TV? What was your avenue and your goal from when you first walked in to getting to TV?
Well, this month or next month is pretty much when I started watching wrestling and I don't know if I'm freezing up now, but if I am, I apologize, gentlemen. But 30 years ago, I started watching wrestling, and the thing I watched more than the wrestling itself were the hosts, were the managers, the commentators, everybody other than the in-ring performers, pretty much. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to be that. Yeah. And so when I got into wrestling, I never in a million years wanted get in that ring, bounce off the ropes. That's not for me. I want to host. I want to interview. I want to be some sort of heel manager at some point. So luckily in FSW, I pretty much got to do everything. And even in the future, even got that time to main event We'll get there. We'll get there. You know, main event that casino. So.
You know, you made, you know, you gave that guy the rub and look at him now. So
look at him now. Look at him. Imagine who else I could give the rub to. Come on now.
What did you see, Joe, in terms of having someone like Paulie there? He's obviously a great talker. He has a great voice. He has a good look. Did you immediately start thinking, hey, this is how I'm going to use him? Where did you see him fitting in at? At what point did you go, hey, I'm going to put you with Jack? And that started the hosting gig for those two together.
Well, it was the pre-show matches. You know, Jack would be out there also, you know, telling everybody, hey, make some noise. Oh, not loud enough. Make some more noise. And 14 minutes later, we'd finally start the show. And everybody was tired of yelling, you know. So with the TV, it kind of just transcended because I didn't really want to do it. I did it at one point, you know, where it was me and Jack. So it left me. I'm also doing the commentary. It's like, I don't need to be all over the place.
Yeah.
We have somebody capable, you know, because I heard Paulie do color once, and that's definitely not a strong suit for him. So the hosting gig was perfect. And early on, there was a lot of good chemistry between them, and we had some great segments, you know, and you know, even later on with Sally, they had better chemistry because they were good friends, you know, and I always looked at them as, you know, Heenan and Monsoon, you know, you could see the love between the two and the goofiness that him and Jack may have been funny, but it wasn't that tight knit, you know, camaraderie, I guess you like to say, you know, between the two. And you know, fast forwarding into the commissioner thing, you know, there was a lot of people that we had as commissioners. And the problem was we had Dino Danelli, we had Rocky, we even had Modest. And the thing was, a guy like Dino is like 70 years old. So there was nothing physical he was going to get in.
Right.
And the problem became for most commissioners – it was mainly the casino shows was the problem, because as I try to explain to everybody, if you go watch Monday Night Raw and you watch SmackDown, the commissioner was always involved in setting things up for the night.
Right.
Well, at the casino show or the pay-per-view, Raw and SmackDown is what sets up everything for the pay-per-view. So when those guys came out, they were all kind of like, oh, you know, all I got to do is thank the crowd and do this. There's nothing to do. And it's like, Sean Ricker's not even getting the microphone tonight because it's the pay-per-view. You know,
right. You
guys are in a position and they were never happy with it. Okay. And I remember we were at a Sam's Town show and we were in the little cubicle area where we did promos. And Paulie came up to me. He was disgusted with the things that were going on. And he was going to come in as the strong babyface commissioner that we never really had, because everybody was this heel commissioner trying to stack the odds. It was tried and true. It was done everywhere. And, you know, it just wasn't that exciting. And at the time, you know, Kevin Cross was really starting to explode. But Kevin at the time was also this heel wrestler that some fans were starting to get behind, but he was universally hated at the time.
Right.
And that started to turn. And, you know, what happened after that, you know, really, if you go down the list of everything that's happened in FSW, I don't think you can find a better feud than Paulie Cover, the commissioner, and Kevin Cross.
Paulie, what's your take on, you know, becoming the commissioner and then getting a chance to work with someone like Cross? And by the way, for anyone listening or watching, Kevin Cross, Eli Drake, Chris Bay, Matt Hardy, look at all your former champions of FSW.
Hammerstone
and Cage.
Chris
Bay. Yep. It's amazing that, you know, you go down the heritage of the lineage of the belt, and it's like almost 75% of your former champions are on a TV with, you know, some major company, which is amazing.
Don't forget Brian Cage either.
Yeah,
okay?
Cage, definitely. So, Paulie, what was it like for you stepping into that role, and did that allow you a chance to, you know, I know you're a big Howard Stern guy, so did it allow you that chance to get creative in terms of what you could do to poke the bear with the crowd in becoming a, you know, a commissioner?
Well, I mean, you can tell from if you go back to the Funny Bone Chops after the shows, the crowd was ready to hate me then, and they didn't even know me. So they were really, and it wasn't about hate, it was about, they just loved seeing me get mine, and I didn't even do anything yet. This is the beginning. Who is this guy? He's the radio guy coming in, trying to be a big shot with the wrestling company. All right, cool. But then I was the beloved interview guy, the goofy host. Never in a million years would I be commissioner. And I'm like, Joe, you got to get control of your company. He's like, well, I'll appoint a commissioner. Then he appoints Paulie Coe as commissioner of FSW. What do I do? And the first opportunity was, well, Jeff Jarrett offered me a spot to fill at the Global Force Wrestling Show. I'm going to pick somebody from FSW. And that first assignment was to pick Kevin Cross. And that's where we started butting heads, was at that moment, because he hurt his shoulder in the match. And he showed up at a student showcase the next day to blame me for his hurt shoulder. And from that point on, that's when the crowd, they were sympathetic. And next thing you know, there you go. They don't like me because I hurt his shoulder for giving him an opportunity. And there was no way I could remain a face commissioner for long.
Is that, Joe, is that just fascinating, the psychology of a crowd like that? Because you would think that Kevin being such a big guy, an intimidating guy, Paulie being such a small guy in comparison, that you would have sympathy for Paulie because he was giving an opportunity, and you should, you know, like the meek guy as opposed to the big bully whining guy. It just fascinates me that was the whole flip for Paulie, just to be hated.
Well, what happened was Cross got to appear on Monday Night Raw, and he did absolutely nothing. He was just introduced and tossed out. But the fact of the matter was, our hometown fans now saw this guy on Monday Night Raw, and there was no way that they're not going to like him.
Right.
Okay. That was the turning point. And I remember talking to Kevin, and we had a show, and basically we wanted him to still be a heel. And he threatened to lock all the doors and basically beat the fuck out of all the fans in the arena that night. And then they turned around and started cheering. And I know I looked around, and whoever was beside me, I'm like, yeah, I don't think we can keep Kevin as a heel anymore. And that was it. And once that happened, now Paulie had to turn around and now, you know, yap at the fans. Now, before he wasn't getting on the fans, but now he's getting on the fans. So now,
well, you don't understand the fans in this, FSW fans, every one of them, every last one of them are heels. Every one of them walks into that building as a heel. There's nothing nice about them. They are filthy, cold-hearted animals. that look at anybody that wants to present structure and discipline and respect, they look at that as crap. They want to see the garbage. They want to see violence. They want to see blood. They want to see people like me get my ass kicked. They like when somebody who's 102 pounds, like JV, gets beat up by Alcatraz in the middle of the ring. Well, I like that too. That was kind of fun. But they like that kind of stuff. So the FSW fans, as much as I love them, they are heels down to the core of it. So they had to. Plus, if you look at Cross, I mean, from the first moment he walked in the door, he didn't even walk in the door as a student. He walked in the door supporting somebody else, and everybody in the building constantly would just look at him going, you got to get up in there. I mean, we knew him from before that first bump that he took, and
yeah.
He was a star.
We got a little Paulie freeze. We're going to
just look at what he did.
Paulie, are you there, buddy?
I am here. Am I cutting out?
Yeah, you just froze up for a second there.
You guys are frozen.
There we go.
All right, we back up?
Yep.
You know, that cheap internet.
There we go. I told you. They make us take this internet from, I live in this apartment complex. We all have the same provider. It's part of the package deal. And everybody snowed in home from work today. So they're all using it. So I apologize.
So what was your plan at that point, Joe, with using this newfound friction between Cross and Paulie? How did you see it building, and where was it going for you?
Well, Kevin had a lot of, to this day, he always had an idea. It's kind of like Remy. You know, they have a million ideas, and a lot of them had to get flushed down the toilet. But he came up with a lot of ideas and thoughts. But a couple of the really good ones that I had was, I remember seeing it many, many years ago. And it was like a showcase student show. And Kevin came out. And I said, keep the microphone in your hand. And while you're beating the shit out of somebody, basically talk through the entire match. And that got over really good. And it got over so good that people were saying when Sheamus did it 2 weeks later that they were copying FSW, which is a great honor, you know. And now that you hear different things, it was possible that they did come across it and saw it. And saw how effective it was. The other one I remember was Kevin was Santa Claus, and Paulie pissed his pants. You know, that got a lot of play for a long time.
To this, every Christmas I hear about it.
You know, and the thing was, you know, whether it was bringing in a guy from Kevin's past or getting, you know, a Chris Masters or whoever it was, we were also trying to build Kevin Cross, the young wrestler, and trying to provide him with stuff. You know, Kevin was the guy who wanted to work Timothy Thatcher, and we made it happen. And the culmination of everything was when, after everything was said and done, the Silverton, I think we called it Crossroads, you know, before Cody Rhodes called it Crossroads. I just realized that. But the main event was going to be Kevin Cross versus Paulie Cover. And it was like no DQ match. And looking at the two, you would think like, who gives a shit? He's going to fucking murder Paulie, whatever. But they were dying to see the beating. You know, a few years back, he did something where Tyshawn Prince got 5 minutes with Sally after he won a match with, I think, Alcatraz, and the crowd loved it, and Tyshawn really didn't beat the fuck out of him, okay? But just the fact that he did some things.
But it was still great.
So at this point, there's a guy I worked with at the IWF in Phoenix, and to me was one of the best dudes I've ever met in my life, Lance Hoyt. And we had used Lance in FSW, I think in Survival of the Fittest, where I think he beat Graves and then he lost to Tyshawn. And now a couple of years later, he was really getting the buzz in New Japan. And it was like, hey, I got this idea. You know, Paulie won't really wrestle. We're going to bring in Lance Hoyt. And the match started, and Paulie went to the locker room area. And all of a sudden, after Cross, you know, went after him, all of a sudden, Cross comes flying into the giant thing that's like a wall that separates everything. And people are like, what the fuck was that? And then all of a sudden, there's this 6'9" dude walking out. And I remember because Lance wasn't that popular in the United States at that time.
Right.
And I remember there was a group of like two people in the corner of me because I'm doing commentary. And the guy's like, holy shit, that's Lance Hoyt. Unfortunately, they were like the only two were like, holy shit, you know. But the thing was, those guys had a brutal match. I remember Lance hitting him with his choke slam finisher. Like, I've never seen him get up a guy so high as he did. And, you know, Kevin couldn't pin him because he wasn't the legal man. And then, you know, when we got to the finish, you know, Paulie was a champ. He got his biggest payday at FSW ever, and he went through a table.
Memories. I still have nightmares.
You know, it's the Jack Slammy Award winning moment of the year, you know.
And feud of the year. Don't forget about that. I mean, really, it was the build up to that, the fact that what the commissioner role did was put Kevin through all these steps. I wanted somebody that was that baby face, that hero in FSW, that Hulk Hogan, that Stone Cold, that somebody other than this evil, vicious guy that Cross is. You know, he's the heel. He's the heel at heart. And like I said, the fans behind it, no matter what he did, he could come out in a costume and they would love it. He could do no, and if he probably will at some point in his career be some sort of psycho clown. But the fact that every challenge that was put in front of him, you want to get to this next step in your career, you have to face Bobby Roode, you have to face Chris Masters if you want to face Brian Cage for the title, all of these steps. But at the same time, if you look at him, it's clear that at some point he's going to move on to a bigger company and eventually make it to WWE. So get him in there with all of these names. And now look at the file footage that FSW Network has of all of these.
I'm waiting for the bid. I'm waiting for WWE to give me a call and say, hey, here's $25K. We want to buy some matches.
Sold.
But yeah, now that, you know, him and Sean Ricker had huge feud. They wrestled a bunch of times. You know, Timothy Thatcher is a WWE guy. Or if they want to bury AEW, they could show him beating up Brian Cage. Or, you know, impacted by
the... Yeah.
Well, you know.
I didn't hear you. You said, or Hardy as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Paulie, for you, let me ask you this. You developed, you know, you did all these different acts as commissioner, and you go through a table. Did you see yourself having to do something like that to essentially not only entertain the crowd, but show the guys that, you know, hey, in the end, I'm one of you guys, and I'll put in 100% plus to convey that I want to get you guys over?
Well, I never, ever in a million years ever wanted to take any sort of bump. I'm not made for that. I see people take bumps all the time. There are certain people that don't belong in rings that are taking bumps just because they want to feel that adrenaline and that glory of doing it. And, you know, because it makes a loud noise when you take the bump. And I just know that my place was where it was. But in this feud that was going on, because of how much I believed in where Cross could go, how much I believed where FSW could go, how much I trusted Joe, and especially how much I trusted Cross, because I knew that, you know, it's not going to be pleasant going through a table, but, you know, I know that some of that's going to go on to him, so he's going to make it unpleasant for himself as much as it's unpleasant for me. And I know for a fact we're both pulling splinters out of our ass for the next hour and a half afterwards. cuts and bruises. That wasn't the hardest part, though. The hardest part is I blew myself up just walking to the ring that night for the introduction. That was the hardest part of the show.
Wow. Joe, what do you think that means to the fans to see him finally get his comeuppance? Did you know that at that point when that match happened that this was pretty much the end of what you had with Paulie? Did you do more after that, or did it become tiring at that point? Because when you build it up so much, it's hard to then continue and keep the fans interested.
You got to understand, Kevin was
real quick. Well, just mentioned the fan reaction of going through the table. There's a fan video, which is actually a video my mom took while she's watching her son get put through a table. But you can see there's a point where our main fans that are front row at every show, they stand up like they're in church, like the Holy Spirit grabbed them, and you see them hugging each other like they won a war. It was really watching them is a lot more fun than watching the match itself, because between social media and the war we had going back and forth with each other, it was really so active with the fans, and they would follow me. I had so many followers from FSW at the time, and the fact that they would call me at my job and instead of requesting a song, they would bust my balls and hang up. And it was really cool, the fact that everything worked together at that time. So it felt absolutely great to see them just rejoice when I eventually got slammed through that table. But then, yeah, I know that a couple people wanted me back, not the next show or the show after, but I really thought that if I get put through a table, like if Cross were put through a table, he'd be back the next show.
Right.
If Spider Warrior were put through a table, he'd be back two shows later with a neck brace and, you know, some bandages.
And a new accent.
And a new accent, a new gimmick. God, whatever. Okay. But if I get put through a table, I should be done for, absolutely done for. So I was out of commission, no pun intended. Though that's when I'm like, I need to be on social media still. I need to have a presence. And that night, I just decided to create an assistant that represented me on social media. And
Hey, hang on that for a second. Let me get back to what you asked about the Cross stuff.
All right.
I want to get that point. See, Kevin Cross was like the first guy that really attacked Facebook and Twitter. It first started with his videos. So people were always paying attention. I know the guy Tyson Tyler from Arizona, you know, he would see stuff. And that's how Kevin got on that super card. Like, I didn't even think he was ready at the time because he started as my assistant. So Cross got a dark match with Evan Daniels on the IWF show. That it's funny to see that now he is pretty much challenging Drew McIntyre or whoever, you know, to wrestle. But besides doing those videos, I remember Kevin calling up Paulie, and Paulie's at the studio. Mm-hmm. So this transcended away from the ring, and people were watching it, and all of a sudden, Kevin shows up at the radio station, and Paulie's shitting his pants. So it's like, even if there was no show, you were still able to see that story continue. And as we all know, wrestling fans need to be invested. They need to give a shit. Right. And even when nothing was going on a Tuesday afternoon, all of a sudden that story is still being told, even though there wasn't a show, you know, for a couple of more weeks. So, you know, once Kevin did that, now you see the influx of the Unguided and all these other guys that are putting out as much content as they can, because they now realize it's all about the followers. It's getting people to give a shit. You know, it's great. We were always thinking in 2013 and 14 and 15, man, we own this Vegas market. And until we then realized, wait a second, you know, again, we were that big fish in a small pond. We want to be the big fish in the big pond. And Kevin would carry the belt around and go to other places. And, you know, similar with Bay when he was the champion, that our guys would go out and represent the company. So, but if I'm not mistaken, I guess when Ricker won the title, this was after, correct, Polly?
Oh, so yes. Yeah, okay, so you're talking
So now you can get back to the assistant thing.
Okay, so and real quick to chime back in on what was going on with Cross up until then. I mean, he would take that title everywhere. I remember covering WrestleMania in Dallas, Texas back in 2016, and he was there as well. And he brought that FSW title everywhere he went. That logo was with him. I showed up at a radio program's event, brought, you know, with him. We had lunch. We filmed a little segment. But I remember walking in downtown Dallas with, you know, Kevin, just looking for places to kind of just show him off. I remember Evolve wouldn't let us into their show at that time. And boy, they're probably regretting that one now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to yap at Gabe when I see him. Yeah,
it was Gabe that, you know, came to the door. Hey, I work with radio trying to cover things. This is the next big star over here. He's like, you guys could buy tickets at the door. Come on. But that was, I believe, McIntyre's last show before he returned back to the company, something along those lines. Because he walked, I remember him walking in right before, and they were all, but I was like, uh-oh, big things happening.
So what was the idea behind creating the persona of an assistant on social media?
So, okay, so I needed somebody to represent me that could still inform these heel FSW fans what's going on with the, plus I had to still work. I had a presence. So I acted as if Gilmore was holding my microphone at work, pushing my buttons, running my social media. And in my mind, whoever this character, if I didn't even know if Joe would even have this, but in my mind, whoever this was somebody that if we were to use them would have no clue what wrestling was trying to break into radio, had nothing, you know, was clueless about everything. Turns out he was clueless about it. But that the fans, though, would get behind. I would bully him. He would be a sympathetic character.
Right.
So I can get my heat back at some point, because we have to move away from Kevin and move on to something else. And eventually maybe he would get the power and I would be put out the pasture. Plus, I was getting my work was taking up my time, and I wasn't able to show up at every event. So somebody had to represent the commissioner. And then Joe, bright idea that a new student that was coming in would play this role of Gilmore.
And he was perfect for the role.
Perfect. but he wasn't a sympathetic. The minute he showed up, hated from the start. I mean, hated. So, you can go ahead.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we brought this guy in. He was training at the school and he wasn't good at all. He couldn't really take bumps. And I remember he took some time off and then he was thinking about possibly being a manager. So when we kind of brought him into the mix, when Paulie started doing this, I go, I think I got a guy to be Gilmore. And then Paulie met him and we both were like, yeah, this is definitely the guy. You know, we put on the big glasses and he, you know, he was just like the total nerd guy. You know, he was reading from a script where, you know, he was reading. It was like word for word, you know, that Paulie would make him say stuff, you know, and, you know, things were going extremely well because Paulie wasn't even around for a while after this point. But, you know, to end the Gilmore story, he was made commissioner. And the next show we were doing was like one of our monster shows. And he comes in and he hits me up. He's like, hey, I got this idea. You know, the show opens and I come out with these people with balloons. And I'm like, dude, we'll save that for the school show. There's way more important things to going on than your appearance. I know you're excited about it. Literally, when we were at Sam's Town, there's a delivery for fucking balloons and a bunch of stuff with giant hearts. And basically, he stormed off and was never seen again.
I mean, this guy was given such an opportunity to jump right into a main event storyline right off the bat. He said, no, I want my name to be whatever it was. No. We have a character named Gilmore that, you know, if you don't want to do it, somebody else will do this role. He was on, but every show he would show up, it'd be the clothes got a little fancier, big suspenders, always a giant top hat or something fancy.
I always remember like the white shirt and like a bow tie.
something very creepy. But then that's what it's not. You guys are my frugal again.
Yeah, hold that
right in the middle.
Your bandwidth is low, it says.
All right, well, you got me now?
There we go.
Sorry, guys.
You're good.
All right, yes.
Page, Pauly Cover's internet.
All right, so the point I'm trying to make is that the role of somebody like a host, manager, or a commissioner, commentator, ref, is these characters that much better. It's not, we aren't supposed to be the focal points of the show.
Right.
It's not come see Commissioner Cover. My character is happy that I'm in a main event at a casino show. And personally, I'm happy that I'm in a main event of a casino show, but I know I don't belong in that main event. The opportunity shows up. You're not supposed to make it about you. And that is what made people like Mean Gene, like Bobby Heenan, though innately they become stars of the show because of that, I guess, selflessness.
Yeah.
But in this situation, this person didn't appreciate that yet. And nobody was even humbling him. I don't understand why. I don't know if humbling even exists anymore in professional wrestling. But there was no humbling, and eventually he pouted off. And about 3-4 months ago, I heard from him for the first time.
Wow.
Asking me if I could write up an essay. He wanted me to write up an essay about my experience with the Gilmore character, what led to it and all of this, so that he could present it to, I don't know if he's a teacher or something, wanted to present it to some class.
Yeah, he was a teacher.
I ghosted him on that one. Like, come on, you don't walk off. And I mean, this character, there's so much potential going on with this. And if I was able to stick around, I was hoping that after that, like just every time I would show up, the Gilmore would be a different person. One time a girl, another time could be an African-American. Then it could be somebody who's old, somebody who's big, somebody who's small, a little person. And just every one of them could be Gilmore. And just, see, you blew it, kid. Anybody could do it now. Just, you know, do that. But unfortunately.
Yeah, I remember that idea. And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
And but unfortunately, he fizzled out and I was no longer available. We don't have to talk about that. And my time with FSW then came to an end. But it was like 7 amazing years that led up to a really, really big culmination, we'll say, with that that table match. And it was fantastic.
How for you, Joe, did you feel when you look at something like that arches for so long? You know, it it builds from day one all the way to the climax, and then ends up circumstantially that was the literal high note of, you know, the end of Polly Cover. Did you think when you first put him into, you know, the role of just hosting, that eventually he would become something that was an asset? Because anyone who's listening to this, if you understand pro wrestling, you understand that Paulie gets it. And more people should think along the lines of how you think, Paulie, because of the fact that you recognize the truth. And that is that there are components to telling a story. It's not the main focus. It's what enhances and makes it, you know, valuable for the fans to enjoy. Did you ever, Joe, see that as you worked with him, that this is someone that you could use in that capacity? And how deflated were you when you realized that was the end of his run?
Well, you got to understand, you know, when we talk about that feud, it wasn't like 8 months. You know, I'm going to say just the feud with Cross was close to a couple of years.
Yeah.
That we were able to keep it viable. And again, if I remember correctly, which again, I believe it was after the fact, that's when Sean Ricker and the Reno Scum's very short-lived heel turn happened.
Wow.
When Cross finally lost the championship, where Polly Cover was behind it. And
that was my return after the
Yeah. You know, a lot of times when you go back to revisit stuff, it's never as effective as the first time.
Right.
And that Pauly Kevin run that was here was unbelievable. The second one that was like here, it accomplished what it needed to do, but the fire was done when Kevin got his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we shot an angle where I had an idea where Kevin wasn't going to be able to make it, and it was against Matt Hardy. But the plan was set all along. And I always watched UFC, and it was like, oh, the guy couldn't defend the belt for 6 months. So instead of stripping him of the belt, they have what's called an interim title.
Yeah.
So I believe Kevin was filming Lucha Underground that weekend, and he wasn't going to be able to make the show. So 4 or 5 days earlier, we have Kevin and Pauly back at the Silverton, and we're filming where PJ Black, of all people. Oh, that was a different one with PJ Black. But he got kidnapped, yeah. And it supposedly turned out to be PJ Black, but we never got to that part of the story. But the thing was, Kevin, because of Pauly, was kidnapped, and he couldn't make the show. So we're not going to have Matt Hardy just cut a promo. We paid Matt Hardy a lot of money. He was here to wrestle for the title. So I came up with the idea of Matt Hardy, and it ended up being Kenny King, the first ever champion. And we're going to have an interim championship where the winner will then face Kevin Cross. And I remember, like, the match is going back and forth. Kenny hits Hardy with the big move, and the ref counts 1, 2, 3. Hardy doesn't kick out. It's like, what the fuck just happened? And we're talking, and we go back and forth, and then we make the decision that his shoulder was up, even though you can absolutely see. And we thought the crowd was going to go and fucking turn on us at that moment. And then all of a sudden, Hardy won, the crowd popped, and nobody gave a shit that Kenny was robbed. Like, we never were able to revisit that. And then at the next show, we wrestled, and we had the old world championship belt, the one that just says wrestling champion, and the FSW belt on a ladder, which we did, like, I think it still is the first ever steel cage ladder match with Matt Hardy versus Cross, and Cross regained the title there. But, you know, there were so many moments that you could think of. You know, I remember him tying up, you know, Tyshawn and beating the shit out of Marco that time.
Wow.
Okay, so that was maybe the seeds that were planted. This is Cross was in his feud with Tyshawn Prince, and there was a contract signing. And this is, yes, I don't want to say 2015.
Maybe, yeah, that was at like the student showcase thing or something.
And so we had the table set up, everything going on. Cross comes out. He makes Tyshawn handcuff himself to the top rope. And then he goes and he beats up the security guard. And I'm in the ring the whole time holding a microphone, just, you know, what am I supposed to do? He handcuffs the kid to the security guard to the bottom rope and just beats the piss out of him. But then he goes over and instead of just grabbing the microphone, I told him, I said, don't just grab the microphone, grab my wrist and have me hold the microphone while you're walking around the ring. It'll just have a better effect than, you know, just taking. And he just taunted Tyshawn and all of it was a very good moment that put him as a heel, and he was still a heel, but boy, you saw the spark at that moment. And as it, you know, moved forward and progressed, it was just absolutely, it was on fire.
So, Joe, what would you say was your favorite or favorites moment or moments of what Paulie did with FSW?
I think the match was the best thing because, you know, in my mind, I love Lance Hoyt. Like, I thought that whole concept and how we did it was brilliant. You know, and man, if we would have did this 3 months ago with Lance Hoyt, it really would have been a big deal. You know, the worst moment was we were doing a beers and body slams. Paulie showed up and we made him the commissioner. And then he was never seen again.
What was
that? We don't need to talk about that moment. It never existed. It just erased that from history.
I think Paulie's freezing up, Joe. You can go ahead and talk a little bit about that moment.
Well, we thought he was going to be around more. And then, you know, he wasn't working any longer at, you know, the station that will remain nameless. No free publicity to those pricks. You know what I mean? Yeah. But, you know, at the time, Paulie thought, hey, it might be a good fit. You know, he always missed FSW. And to be honest, we have never filled the commissioner role since Paulie left.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when Paulie did it compared to the other people, when the other people did it, it was nothing special. So trying to create a new way of doing things with a commissioner, we were always trying to think of. And until the day comes where I have an idea about a commissioner that's anywhere near as good as the one that we have with Paulie, it's kind of a tired position.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, yeah, I'm Vince McMahon as a commentator. So it isn't like, well, a lot of people didn't know Vince was the guy who ran the company. Well, everybody knows I run the company. Everybody knows, like even on commentary now, Jake's like, oh, you didn't know about it? I thought you made the match. And it's kind of like that little inside running joke. So that commissioner spot has to be really something that adds value because, again, if we have a guy who doesn't wrestle and he has the ability to do a lot of things, well, we're not going to make him a ref. And if he's a manager, okay, he's only going to be dealing with one person. So that might be a position for somebody who can break out as a star. But right now we have extremely talented wrestlers and managers, and we have the ring announcers we use from Arizona and Shibata. They're awesome. But we haven't had somebody walk in as the character that says, hey, like I already knew Sally, but I felt he could be a good manager, a guy who did theater. He did commercials. He filmed a lot of things. And Paulie had the idea, and then we were able to have the wheels turn and figure out ways to make it effective. And then all of a sudden, you know, it became the snowball effect. You know, we weren't looking this as like, hey, in 18 months, we're going to blow this off and it's going to be Paulie in a match against Cross. You know, I think Paulie mentioned it to me, or Kevin mentioned it to me, probably 2 or 3 months before the idea culminated. And it was like, hey, and I'm like, I don't know, man, Paulie, I don't think he's going to be able to take a bump. And Kevin's saying, don't worry, I'll protect him. Yeah. He's good with it. You know, Kevin has a way of making some people do things that they generally do not want to do. You know, I was talking about John Morrison, where he wrestled, and we love John, but when we first brought him in Mesquite, you know, he wouldn't put over Kenny King. You know, he just got fresh off. You know, he didn't want to take a pinfall loss. A lot of the bigger name guys don't.
Right.
We did the NWF. Shelton Benjamin was the co-booker with me and Johnny the Bull. And in the main event, Shelton Benjamin, ex-Intercontinental Champion, still couldn't go over John Morris. So, fast forward to the Mecca, and Kevin's got this guy, Jeff, who's got a lot of money in Oklahoma, or had a lot of money, and he was willing to bring in John Morrison for Kevin Cross. And I'm like, yeah, but Kevin, it's not going to put you over. And he's like, don't worry, it's all set. It's going to be great. John Morrison taps out in the middle of the ring. And I'm looking around like, what the fuck? Holy shit. Same thing with the Natural Born Killers. Hey, I got a guy. Put some money aside. You're going to wish you had put away more. And all of a sudden, John Moxley shows up in our fucking arena. Like, John Moxley don't know Kevin Cross from Adam. Makes a video, contacts him, convinces him. And now we have John Moxley on our show. So, you know, Paulie going through a table was something that I didn't think Paulie would want to do. Then right before the match, you know, he tried to pull a China and hold me up for big money. So I had to cave in and throw him the big dollars.
Got that right. Give me that voucher for the Silverton restaurant so I can get my ribeye steak afterwards.
That's right. And have dinner with Robert Dalton.
Don't remind me of that. But pretty much, I just lost my train of thought. Now I want a steak so bad. But go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, you know, in that mindset, and just, you know, talking to Kevin, it does seem like he is a guy that you just trust. And was that something that, you know, working with him, was that a good description? Is that you trusted him totally in his direction and his mind and with your physicality as well?
It's no stranger to anybody watching that feud on screen or off screen that Kevin and I are friends. Yeah. It was always, we always presented it much like the that old cartoon where you had the wolf and the sheepdog, and they would, how you doing? They would clock in every day, and then they would try to kill each other all day long, and then at the end of the day, they'd clock out and see him walk off in the sunset, because the same fans that just saw him, you know, I just pissed myself in the middle of the ring. He was holding an axe over me. NXT's coming up, and who's sitting ringside, front row at NXT, Paulie Cover and Kevin Cross, you know, right? Like, what are you two doing here? It was a very psycho kind of situation. How does he show up at my work? How does he get access into the work? You know, how are we both Facebook Living at the same time? And, you know, it was a weird chemistry, which then, because of that and because of how it started, because he would like my posts on social media, and that was a great interview you did with Jimmy Hart. Do you have other interviews posted somewhere? I'm like, oh, look at you. Of course you can check out my stuff. And it built a relationship built from there. So I developed the trust. And then eventually it got to the point where I looked at him and I said, I can't take your finisher. There is just no way. I'll be done with. I'll be dead. I'll be paralyzed, whatever. I can't do it. And he's like, nah, you need to go through the table. And he said, if that's what it's going to take, that's what it's going to take. And I remember just staring at the table before the match because part of the match is I'm the one who put the damn table in the ring and set it up. I set it up for myself to go through it. But I remember looking at it and I went, okay, so what do we do? You know, where do we cut on this table? And Lance looks over at me and goes, nah, man, you'll go right through that. And Rocky looks over, nah, this will break. And Kevin, oh, man, it'll. And I went, fuck all of you. Just fuck you guys. And it was beautiful. It was one of the best table breaks I've seen. It was fantastic.
Joe, you know, speaking of Cross's ability to talk people into doing things, did he ever present you with anything in terms of potentially being physical with you in the ring?
Yeah, he knew that wasn't going to happen because he wasn't a job to me, and that was the only possible thing that could occur. But I'll tell you a funny story. So, you know, now that it's becoming the Kevin Cross Hour. I remember we had Cody was the No Limits champion, and he was feuding with somebody. And I remember Kevin coming in, and he's like, I got this great idea. And out of the blue, he was going to beat Cody. He was going to singularly beat the tag team champions. And at the time, I don't even remember if he was the heavyweight champion or not. But he was going to walk around with all the belts.
Brilliant.
That way, when Chris Bay beat him, it would mean a lot more. And I'm like, so you're going to bury the tag division. You're going to beat Cody, who's in the middle of a feud with somebody, and they're having like a big time kind of match. And just out of the blue, it's some random school show. So, you know, he was always thinking, let's just say.
So, you know, in you just saying that, now it makes sense why he confronted the 205 Live champion. I think he's probably pitching that in NXT that he takes all the titles.
There you go.
I can see it. I can see it.
Oh, man. So, Paulie, when you look back at, you know, the opportunity you had and, you know, obviously you do, you know, in calling the fans heels, it's a great distinction and honor because that means the fans are invested. If there's one thing that you look back on and you go, you wish you could have done or could have changed, is there something that stands out to you?
Well,
be nicer really, to Jack Slammy.
I think the fact that there were like 3.5 years, from the time I stopped with FSW to the time I moved away, that what could have been done, the people that came through FSW after, that's where this role, you know, where that could have gone. Imagine how Commissioner Cover would have praised and loved Hammerstone as champion, how much he would have been pissed when Youngboy became champion. Look, I mean, of anybody, I mean, that would have been like just a mockery. That you just, the things that could have, you know, Chris Bay would have been fun to see what could have been done with him. And I always thought that there was something that was needed with Jack and Remy at the time that was going somewhere, but just because of the situation, it never went anywhere. And I just wish I could have added
that never happened, that I was looking forward to when they came back from China, and it just,
I absolutely adore Remy and Jack. I love them to death. There are so many people in FSW that I've met that, you know, I mean, Cody is the sweetest, kindest, craziest human being you'll ever met. There's Jake, Funny Bone. I mean, somewhere in that deep, dark soul of his, there's a really genuine human being. You'll always get the truth out of Funny Bone, whether you hear it, you don't want to hear it. He's just a genuine human being. I mean, one of my best friends that I've ever met in the entire world, Sally. I mean, John Paul. He's, you know, I don't call him Sally or John Paul. Bubba. He's, I mean, the fact that, you know, Joe and Joey and Deborah and Rocky and just the whole the family aspect in that whole time. My favorite part of FSW was during the daytime, sitting on my ass at home on Facebook, just going back and forth with Joe. You know, I can scroll through the past like 4 years real quick in our conversations because there haven't been too many just of circumstances. But prior to that, it would take you a lifetime to scroll through. he would tell me everything and we'd go back and forth and, you know, I would bounce some ideas off of him. And Joe actually used many of those ideas, which I the fact that Joe gave me an opportunity to be creative, to work with Jack Slammy. I mean, as much as I may bust balls on, you know, his performance sometimes, I would show up. He would have the light set up, the audio set, everything was set up and ready to go. He didn't know any of the people on the show or any of that sort of stuff. What's great, if you get the FSW Network, and I recommend it, I guess in an effort to get content on there, there are full hard cam views of entire events with the warm up at the beginning and the 15-minute intermission with the raffle giveaways in there. And I've been watching those moments because, I mean, I like to see what we did. But, you know, Jack and Rocky have a gift of saying, "Hey, look at me." And everybody will stop and look. After that, you need somebody to fill in the blanks. And that's where I came in and said, "On the card tonight, we have blah, 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 blah. Let's get going." So they were good. Look at me. And then I'm very grateful for the moments with them. Especially then we flipped over to Sally. I cannot tell you how much fun. And those hosting segments, I believe it was only a matter of maybe 4 to 6 months that only took place. Jack and I hosted for years. And then Sally and I, it was real quick. But I believe we created some magic. And, you know, if you're going to have hosting segments, you want to have something that's either going to be entertaining or really help move the program along. And luckily we were able to incorporate like Tyshawn and Kevin into certain hosting segments to move their feud along. Right. And, you know, or Modest would be in there locking us out of the building so that we're, you know, dying of thirst in the desert heat outside. And Joe let us be as stupid as possible. And the fact that Joey was behind the camera, or we had Robert or Matt or whoever was running the camera at the time, and then Joey would piece it all together. Joey, you know, Joey is the heartbeat of FSW. He's the veins, the blood pumping through it. He is the brain, the nervous system, and everything of FSW. He did it all.
Yeah.
But if you ask, I got his props.
You know, I can't believe FSW existed without him.
Well, I mean, Joey, when I started with FSW, part of my job, because of how shitty the audio was, especially with commentary and everything, I offered, all right, you know what? I'll set up and I can record. It was Disco and it was Joe. Every Tuesday afternoon, we would record commentary for High Octane and I would, you know, work the audio. And the fact that Joe gave me the opportunity to sit next to, you know, Disco Inferno, who honestly was one of the only reasons I liked WCW. And now I sit back and I think, I go, whoa, what an opportunity I missed, because podcasting wasn't a big thing back then. Adam Carolla really hadn't revolutionized everything yet. And the fact that I'm sitting there every Tuesday with two guys that like to talk. And now look, you got yourself a show every week. Disco is on every podcast possible. I'm like, what a missed opportunity to have started a podcast before.
See that? You could have still been in Vegas if you did that.
The money I could be making now. but
Paulie, really, really quick, Paulie, thank you for saying that, because ironically enough, if you're listening to this here on Wednesday, please tune in Friday, because I have an interview with Disco going up. So yes, he has made the rounds on every single podcast.
He's really a good guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In kind of winding down here, Joe, did you ever think with the way technology is of possibly, especially if, you know, TV is getting together and the more you're doing on the network, of potentially maybe bringing back Paulie's character in a Jack Tunney type of way where they would always film, you know, Jack doing his announcement of whatever it was. And he was, you know, rarely ever in an actual setting because he'd cut it in Canada and that would be it. Would you ever think about using South Bend Pauly Cover here to, you know, do a little commissionership or stick his nose into things?
Well, it's definitely possible because one of my favorite managers, guy I did color with, Stu Stone, because he's always in Canada, you know, we were discussing, you know, not really any commissionership thing like that, but just some kind of, you know, pop culture segment that might air, you know, weekly or biweekly, you know, every couple of weeks on the TV. And Stu was up for the idea, but, you know, with the situation going on, we never really finalized the deal here on TV. So, you know, it's definitely a possibility. You know, again, it all depends on scheduling. It's like we got my boy Lawson and Sally are supposed to be the new co-hosts of the TV show.
Right.
But, you know, scheduling wise, you know, Lawson and Sally, they've had a hard time kind of, you know, being able to get together. So there's always possibilities, you know, but the problem is, you know, fans of FSW, yeah, we definitely got a lot that were really, you know, big fans 2, 3, 4 years ago. But especially not doing shows, you know, the question is, will he be remembered? Absolutely. But will he be remembered enough that people are excited about what we're going to do? Because right. I'm pretty sure Paul.
Well, you see, with the new FSW network, what's so great is you can go back through hours and years of footage and tell stories all over again and present something in a new light. And what's great about this pandemic is why not go back and you know, polish up. There's a lot of fat on that WWE network that, you know, can definitely be Benoit and definitely should be at some point.
We actually have on a few of them, but obviously some have still slipped by the cracks.
But there is a lot of stuff that could be told once again, the history of the FSW title, the history of the tag team titles, the history of you know, the whole cross-cover feud that went on could be told in a 2-hour thing. I would love to see. I don't know if there, other than on Fight TV, I don't know if there is the match between Cross and I. It's not on the network yet, I don't believe. And I would love to see it in the full form with the introductions, because I mean, I swear I blew up walking to the ring that night. So
I would definitely have to look into it if it isn't on the network. It's obviously, you know, we've gotten all the stuff that we had sent to Fight TV because some of it, you know, that's a fully edited, commentated show.
Right.
So, you know, if we aired it on that, then we would definitely be interested. I know I heard you were busy watching Eddie Guardado and Lorenzo C. Henderson matches. So,
last night I watched was the hard cam version of whatever the event was where Tyshawn got his 5 minutes with Sal. And we had some good, I mean, the crowd, they popped for that. It was at an angle that we didn't show on TV. So it was really cool to see the fans all crowded the ring to get their photos when we all posed for that selfie. So yeah, that was definitely a highlight of watching the network last night.
As we finish up here, any final thoughts, Paulie, about Joe, FSW, the fans, Cross, anything that comes to mind that you'd like them to know? And of course he would freeze
dead
right there.
Dead silence.
Connection now. Outstanding. It's a great time of day for me to be. Do you have me now?
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
I want to give a final thought here.
You go ahead.
All right. We good? All right. So Joe has, and I do apologize. I really wanted to do this from the studio where I knew the connection would be perfect. But again, I was snowed in. So
you know, if Jim Ross was on with you today, you would have braved the snowstorm, Paulie.
I would have been on my skis. I would have been on my skis, on my hands and knees, whatever it took to get there.
He would have walked there.
But what Joe has provided me with an opportunity. I was, like I said, when I got into FSW, I was in between. It was after the first time that I had ever been laid off. You know, there were budget cuts. It was that 08, 09 budget cut period. Yeah. And when you get let go from a first big gig you ever have, you are heartbroken, you are deflated, you are done for. And the fact that he let me in the door and let me apply my craft, it's you know, I mentioned Jim Ross and how Jim Ross, you know, when I was a younger guy and had Bell's palsy and thought my life was over, that the fact that I saw Jim Ross still doing the thing that you know, I had hope. And I had lost hope by that time, losing my job, and Joe gave me hope again. So there are a couple people around that I really, really care for deeply, and Joe is definitely one of them. The fact that he let me host his show, he took himself off to put me on. The fact that he let me be in a major
who
the
says
fact that I was
to
in a major that? Feud. Joe knows what he's talking about and what he's doing, and it really, if you give Joe the time, he'll give you the time. So he'll listen to everybody's, but make sure you listen to Joe as well. If you want to talk to him, you want to tell him your story ideas. And the biggest thing to do, if you have an idea, don't start with how it's going to put you over. Start with how it's more importantly going to put FSW over for Essen that you're going up against. And in return, it's going to put you over. Start off that way. And I think a lot more people will listen to your ideas and possibly, and if you're good, you know, don't shit the bed, you know, that's, you know, but Joe gives opportunity. There are people that have motherfucked him, that have tried to screw FSW, that have gone away, that thought, you know, I'm going to take more of me over here. And he gives them a chance again, and a well-deserved chance. You know, I mean, everybody's allowed to think of themselves, you know, if you can get paid, go get paid. But they all come back to FSW. Why? Because Joe gives opportunities, and Joe is not a bad guy. There are bad promoters, and a lot of times they have smiles on their faces, and they rub your back, and they kiss your ass, and then they go and sit in a room for 3 hours after a show until you give up waiting for your payday. Joe will give you your payday. Ask for it. Just say, hey, Joe, you got that? And ask for it. You know, if you don't deserve it, then he won't give it to you, but ask for it.
Joe, any final thoughts about Paulie and what he's meant to you and the company?
Well, yeah, I think we can wrap it up all in one thing, because at this time I'd like to announce that we're going to induct Paulie as the first inductee into our next Hall of Fame.
All right. There we go, man. All right, brother.
It would have been last year, and we knew Paulie was going to be out here for AEW weekend, and it was like, you know what? He's been gone long enough that, you know, he was involved in one of the biggest periods in FSW history with Cross, that, you know, Paulie Jack Slammy. It was a tough decision. You know, decided to go with Paulie, and Paulie will be excited to see who the other representatives will be.
That should be fun. Thank you. Wow. I mean, when you started the FSW, because if I have it correct, it's FSW, it's Las Vegas Wrestling Hall of Fame for the history of, you know, what has taken place in Las Vegas. The fact that Nick Bockwinkle is in there. I'm sure at some point the controversial Buffalo Jim may get a mention in that Hall of Fame. We never know, but he did provide years upon years of entertainment. The fact that Rush is in there, I mean, there's so many names of so many greats that have come through, and the fact that you even want to include me, I would think that, I mean, it's humbling. I do appreciate I tried to give my all in my 15 and a half years in Las Vegas on the radio. My bosses never asked me to cover WWE or FSW or AU or any of those companies. My bosses couldn't care less. When there was a company trying to put FW out of business, they tried to sabotage my career by sending a letter to my boss on their auto garage letterhead and saying that Paulie doesn't cover our product the way he covers FSW. And the bosses were like, Paulie doesn't have to cover any product. He does that out of the kindness of his heart because it's part of his job to provide content to this company. And the wow. fact, and the boss, the one thing he said was, who's Edge? I'm like, what are you talking about? It says in this letter, Edge was at my show. Paulie should have covered that. But nonetheless, there have been people out there do all that. And, you know, it's my loyalty and everybody's loyalty should lie with FSW.
Wow. Well, we have the first inductee to the 2021 Hall of Fame. That's amazing.
I have to write a speech now. When are we doing this?
Well, we're looking at May or June again because that's when our anniversary weekend. We're actually doing a special version because of limited capacity, maybe a two nights of shows and an anniversary and make it a whole weekend.
Well, you know that the very first FSW show, if I'm correct, was May 24th, 2009. And, well, Paulie Cover happens to turn 40 on May 24th, 2020. So maybe sometime around there, I need to make I need to double mask up and make a trip to Vegas.
There you go. By May, we should be in good shape.
Hopefully, we can get a couple shots in the arm by then. I'm hoping.
Well, you are an essential worker, so.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Can you get that notarized, please? And let me take that somewhere. Give me my damn shots.
Well, again, if anyone is not familiar with Paulie and what he has done with FSW, check out the network. Check out Fight TV. There is just so much to be seen. And like Paulie said, from different angles, things that you might have not, you know, if you hadn't been there, it's like you're actually there for, you know, the live events that capture everything. But also, if you like good radio in the South Bend area, tune into 103.9 The Bear and catch Paulie.
Grab it for free on the My Bear app. I mean, it's absolutely free. The My Bear app, you can hear me every day. It's rock and roll. It's not, you know, this modern alternative stuff, which is great for itself, but it's we play everything that you could possibly imagine that is good rock and roll. We cut out.
And apparently, you
know, it's cold, it's snowy, but a good bunch of people, a great place, and it's good to have rock.
And if you ever need anybody to bash Notre Dame sports, I'm your man.
I'll remember that if I ever want to get my ass kicked.
Well, you could have Alcatraz on the other side talking about how great Notre Dame is. So we could have a debate why Notre Dame sucks. You know what
very,
I mean?
Very true.
And then that,
very true.
And then that will lead to the Hall of Famer Alcatraz putting the Hall of Famer Paulie Cover through a table. And
hey, Matt, real quick, Matt. I want to thank you for hosting this and starting up this program with Joe. Being stuck out here, moving to a new place during a pandemic and not knowing a bunch of people or getting out and stuff, it's good to see that there are programs like this where I can, you know, reconnect with old friends. I can listen every week and hear people. I mean, you do it. Lawson had his cup of coffee while he was still interested in doing that, but now he's doing some sort of like softcore porn in a backyard. I don't know what that is that he's doing, but you know, between that and whatever the hell Sin did the other night, I don't know what the hell's going on in Las Vegas, Joe.
we say we thought there'd be a lot more wrestling involved in that match.
Wow. That's a whole other program. And I think you've yes. touched a little bit on that one with Sin.
Well, on that note, everyone, please, again, tune into FSW, get the network, and you know, tune into Fight TV, tune into the YouTube, the Twitch channel, and catch up on everything. So when the pandemic is over and there's new content and live shows, you'll be able to just come right in and be a part of the Heel Crowd family, which I think we might have new shirts there for fans. You know, the Heel family.
I get a cut of that. 10% right here.
So,
well, you know, didn't you have the Cover Coalition shirt that Tom Crawford bought, right?
Well, if you made your own shirt with my name on it, you had to give me $20 for it.
There you go.
So, I got a whopping 40.
You know, before we do go, I want to mention a bunch of things.
Yes.
I got a phone call today meeting with one of the major venues that we would love to be doing shows at. We're trying to incorporate, you know, because we deal with Impact and GCW, you know, maybe, you know, an all day thing down the line, but we got the network exclusive shows. They're going to be weekly. We're looking at doing some more, you know, closed set shows, but because of the regulations being eased up a little bit, we could bump it up a little bit for the invite only shows starting yesterday. But on March 15th, the numbers go back to 100 in our facility. And if Samstown is able to get an entertainment department going, just like the Golden Knights, the large gathering events, they have been, you know, been approved as long as you go through the state. And the Golden Knights are looking to put 3,000 people at the, at the hockey stadium,
right?
And T-Mobile, and you know, we're looking to be hopefully down the line where an 800,000 seater, the numbers that were thrown around before they got taken away was 250, and that's why we're saying if we can have 250 people, we'll do a two-night doubleheader similar to what WrestleMania is doing, because they can only put in so many people.
Right?
They want to maximize, you know, what they're doing. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks we got some big announcements.
And I'm glad you said the network.
Nice.
The network exclusive shows. Just this past weekend, who knew that Glenn King would become a manager for Jimmy Wang Yang?
Right.
It was brilliant stuff, and stuff that just you'd not expect. Definitely.
That's right. $7 for 3 or 4 network exclusives a month. That alone is only $2 to watch a show.
Yep.
You know, the Jimmy Wang Yang segment was worth the $7 itself. Just to say that you saw it.
Oh, man.
But I'll never forget it.
Yeah, yeah.
but that's what wrestling's about. Moments that you will remember till the day you die.
And with that being said, you know, everyone, thank you for watching and listening, and we appreciate every thing that you guys do for us, being a fan base. Thank you so much, and we can't wait to be back next week and bring you another exciting episode of the DeFalco Files. And please support the Vegas Bad Boys of podcasting as well. And until next time, take care, everybody.